morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I am John Scott, your host. I hope everybody's doing well. I took a little hiatus after the Stanley Cup Finals for a couple days. Did a little golfing down in Chicago. Did a little work on the house, trying to survive the epic rain that we've been getting here in Traverse City and getting ready for a big camping trip we're taking on Sunday. So I apologize. But more precisely, I needed a break after that Stanley Cup Final because I was absolutely shocked, I think, that the Carolina Hurricanes won the 2025-2026 Stanley Cup Finals. I had been one of their biggest opponents through the whole season. I just kept expecting them to falter. I kept expecting them to just fall back into the mean, to do what they always do in the playoffs, and just kind of collapse and not be able to keep up with the talent of their opposition, but it never happened. This team just kept chugging along game after game, winning round after round, not showing any signs of any weaknesses. Goaltending was strong. They were getting opportune goals when they needed them, not from their stars, but from other sources. Taylor Hall, Logan Stankoven, Jackson Blake, all the other players. Stahl was obviously the Conn Smythe champion, scoring goals when they needed him to score big, big goals. And here we are now. They are Stanley Cup champions. And first and foremost, I just want to say I apologize. I did not see this coming. Honestly, I thought the Vegas Golden Knights were going to win that series based on their high-end talent and their playoff pedigree. I thought Jack Eichel and Mark Stone and William Karlsson, with the addition of Mitch Marner, who had been playing fantastic, and Thomas Hertl and all the other guys, Hanifin and Theodore and everybody else, were going to be able to handle the pressure that the Carolina Hurricanes put on you, whether it's a forecheck, whether it's in D-zone, everywhere, in all facets of the game. They're pressure team. They're suffocating. But they weren't able to handle that. And congratulations to the Carolina Hurricanes. I don't think we can undersell the job that they did in these playoffs. This was one of the most dominating playoff runs we've ever seen. And I want to do it myself. I want to say, well, look at who they played. You know, maybe they didn't get the hardest competition. The top dogs of the Eastern Conference, they missed them. They didn't have to face the Toronto Maple Leafs. I know everybody laughs. They aren't a top dog, but they are good. They missed the playoffs. They didn't have to face the Tampa Bay Lightning. They were bounced in the first round by the Canadiens. They didn't have to face the Florida Panthers. They had a down year with all the injuries, so they weren't even in the playoffs like the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they didn't have to face those guys. Okay. I don't know. I think you're selling the Carolina Hurricanes short, because what they did in these playoffs, winning their first 11 games, 12 games, I can't remember what they won, the run they went on, but they just dominated the first couple rounds. They dominated the Eastern Conference Finals over the Montreal Canadiens, and then they go into the Stanley Cup Finals expecting to get some pushback versus the Vegas Golden Knights. And there was some initial pushback, but all in all, it was a dominant six-game series for the Carolina Hurricanes. I don't think you can look at it any other way. So what is it? Is this team the best team ever? Because they just dominated through the playoffs and only lost three games and very, very rarely had any sort of pushback from the teams they were playing against? Or was it they just hit it at a sweet spot? And they just kind of meandered their way through the playoffs, and obviously they play the teams they were matched up against, but they got lucky. The way the seedings fell, the way their division fell, where it was just a garbage division, and here we are, they're Stanley Cup champions. And they dodged Colorado and Dallas and Minnesota, and the Vegas team they played, they were injured, they were coming in, maybe banged up a little bit from playing Colorado four games, so I don't know. I guess this depends on however we want to see the situation, but let's break into the series, because I think you do have to applaud what Carolina did, but you have to look at how they were able to do it. And looking at games 5 and 6, to me, myself, it looked like Vegas was just out of gas. Did anybody else get that sense? Watching Jack Eichel up and down the ice, watching him never wanting to be first to the puck, whether he had, 10 feet of space or 2 feet of space, he always let the other team get the puck first. Watching the defensemen, Noah Hanifin and Rasmus Anderson, just play sluggish, turning pucks over where they never would have done it in the first or second or regular season. Those are things you're not used to seeing, but it was happening very consistently in games 5 and 6 for the Vegas Golden Knights. And it just got me thinking, why are these happening? They didn't play that many more games than the Carolina Hurricanes. I think they played 3 more games, so they shouldn't have been tired. Yes, Braden McNabb went out for a game and a bit, and they played a little bit more ice time, but that's normal this time of year. I just think it's the overwhelming, unrelenting forecheck of the Carolina Hurricanes that finally broke the camel's back. That old adage, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. Something happened that broke the Vegas Golden Knights to where they just didn't believe they could win anymore. And I saw it with my own eyes in games 5 and 6. That belief that they could come back, that belief that they were the better team was not there. And it led to a 4-2 victory in game 5 and a 3-0 victory in game 6. The Knights, I think, knew that they were not the better team. They knew that the Hurricanes were better than them at every facet. They were hardworking. They were more skilled. They had more conviction. And they just gave up. And it just kind of irked me a little bit. And the prime example was Jack Eichel. Their highest paid player, their star they got over from Buffalo, and he's already won a cup, so you can't fault him. He won a gold medal this year with the, you know, U.S. Olympic team. But he just started to frustrate me with just his nonchalant, lackadaisical style of play when he just kind of coasts through the neutral zone. And I was applauding this, you know, 2-3 weeks ago when he was on the power play, because he nonchalantly just breaks into the power play and then chips it out to the wing, and then they're in. That's their zone entry, is just Jack Eichel being creative and being a superstar hockey player. But you can't do that in the corners. You can't do that in the D zone. You can't do that when it's 5-on-5. And I got to the point where I was looking at Jack Eichel and I'm just screaming at him through the screen saying, just try. It looked like he was completely checked out. And that can be said for a large group of the Vegas Golden Knights. Yes, there were some that tried and, you know, were really, really upset when they lost. I think Thomas Hertl, I felt terrible for Thomas. He was like playing his ass off all series long. But on the back end, like I mentioned, Noah Hanifin, just turnovers, and it's Noah Hanifin, and you're just looking at him going, why are we doing this? And they just look beat up. And it just got me thinking, why are they so beat up? And the reason is they were not willing to adapt their game to play the Carolina Hurricanes. And kudos to them. You know, you always want to try to force the other team into your game plan. Going into a game, whether it's a 7-game series, whether it's a 1 game in the regular season or a preseason game, you never want to curtail your tendencies, your game plan for the other team. A good team, a good coach, a good environment always says, you know what? They're going to have to adapt to us. We're going to force them to play our game. And the Knights tried to do that. They tried to play the freewheeling up and down game in games 1 and 2, and it worked to a certain extent where it was just up and down, you know, leads and comebacks and ebbs and flows, and it was just chaotic the first couple games of the series. It was 5-4, 4-3, and 5-4. It was great hockey. But around game 3, you could sense that Carolina took hold of this game, and they got to their game, and they got to the forecheck, and they got to the pressure. And you could tell the Vegas Golden Knights couldn't handle that. Now, a good team, and I'm not saying they're not a good team, but a Stanley Cup team needs to adapt in that situation. And the Knights, you could tell, the shot disparity was insane. The Hurricanes would outshoot them by 10, 20 shots at points during the game. And yes, they would come back in the third period when it was garbage time and Carolina was just holding back. But in the meat of the game, in the part of the game that meant something, the first, second, and first part of the third, it was all Hurricanes, the whole series. The Knights were not able to humble themselves and say, you know what? Maybe we have to play Hurricanes hockey. As dirty as that feels, as icky as that feels to say, we have to do something to keep up with this team. And that something was just throw pucks at the net, was just to get pucks deep. And they could never do it. They always tried to make that extra pass. They always tried to make that cute play at the blue line, whether it was at the offensive or defensive zone, and they got burned time and time and time again. And then you look up at the scoreboard, and it's the end of the second period, and you're down 3-1, and you're down by 20 in the shot disparity, and you've turned the puck over 15 times, and you're taking penalties because you're chasing the game. And never once did they stop and say, maybe we should just dump the puck in. Maybe we should just throw pucks at the net. In game six, for Pete's sake, there was 19 minutes of actual game time that they did not get a shot on net. One period of actual game time where they did not get shots in the net, which should not happen. And I know Tortorella is a good coach, and I played for him, and I know he should have been screaming at the players, but at some point you just have to look yourself in the mirror and go, we are not that good. We cannot win playing this way. And they weren't able to do that. And so they continue to do the same thing time and time again, enter the offensive zone, try to go east-west, try to make that extra pass when you're in the slot in a grade A scoring chance to try to make the best possible play to get a tap-in goal, rather than just throwing the puck at a goalie who wasn't that good. Brandon Bussey is not a great goalie. He isn't. He's an average goalie on a good defensive team. But the Knights wouldn't challenge him. They wouldn't make it difficult for him. They just made that extra pass. And the Hurricanes defense, they're too good. Their forwards are too good. They're too prone to coming back and helping back their defensemen. They're a five-man unit. And you can't do that. And that's why they lost. I'm not trying to take anything away from the Carolina Hurricanes. The reason they lost was because the reason the Knights lost was because of the Hurricanes. What I'm saying is I do see an avenue where the Knights win that series. But they never went down that road. They never were able to humble themselves enough to say, let's just get the blue, throw pucks on net, get a rebound, get greasy, get on the cycle, and go to work. They were never able to do that. They were never able to get sustained zone time because they wanted that pretty goal. They wanted that cutesy goal where you come out of the corner, you go backdoor, and then you go backdoor again for a tap-in. You enter the zone, you go east, then you go west for a one-timer for a beautiful goal. They were never able to do what the Hurricanes do, go low to high, shoot the puck, get a tip, get a rebound, score a goal. And that's too bad because I would have loved to see a Game 7. I would have loved to see a Knights championship. But c'est la vie, we're on to the Carolina Hurricanes winning their second Stanley Cup in their history, and it was a great win for them. But it begs the question. I did a hit on TSN right after the win, and the big question everybody's asking is, can they repeat? Is this a team that when you line up next year for game one of the regular season, they're going to be Stanley Cup contenders? Or is this a St. Louis Blues, a Washington Capitals, where they win the Stanley Cup and then they just go away? And I really kind of rushed my answer when I was on the TSN panel. And I just said, yeah, I think this team, you know, they're going to go back to the mean last year, and they're going to go back to who they were. But I'm going to retract that answer. I do think this team will be back next year to compete for a Stanley Cup. And it's because of their roster. I went and looked at their roster on Puckpedia and Daily Faceoff and all those other sites that everybody uses. And I was amazed at the makeup of this roster. When you look at the high-end guys, they're locked in for a long time. But that second line of Hall, Stankoven, and Blake, they make a total of all three players. And keep in mind, this team, this line, was the highest scoring line in the playoffs. They single-handedly got this Hurricanes team a Stanley Cup win. Stankoven could not stop scoring goals. Jackson Blake was incredible, and Taylor Hall found the fountain of youth and was just incredible. Could have rightfully won the Conn Smythe if Jordan Staal wasn't so incredible. He was that good in the playoff rounds. But this one line makes $14 million combined next year and the year after that and the year after that. Logan Stankoven signed a deal this season for 8 years, $6 million. $6 million. Jackson Blake only makes $5 million. Taylor Hall makes $3 million. That's crazy. And when you think Kirill Kaprizov makes, what, $16 million? And Draisaitl makes $13 million, and all these other guys make that much money as a singular person, and you get a whole line that makes that much money? That's just good GMing by the Carolina Hurricanes. And then their top line, obviously, Aho makes a ton of money, but he played great down the stretch. Svechnikov showed up. But the big reason this team won is their GM was not happy or didn't sit on his hands when he got slapped in the face by the Rantanen issue. He made, you know, lemons out of lemonade when Mikko Rantanen comes in and he goes, yeah, I don't like it here. Let's move on. Any other GM could have used that as a disadvantage and just kind of sold off to anybody and just said, okay, we're going to get rid of this problem as quick as we can. Yuri Tolsky saw this and he goes, okay, fine. You don't want to be here. We'll make the best of this. And he goes to Dallas and he gets a first rounder and he gets Logan Stankoven. And that trade right there single-handedly won this team the Stanley Cup. And, you know, guys on my Slack channel, they Dallas Stars fans, John, he was just saying, you watch Logan Stankoven. This guy's going to be incredible. And I was a little skeptical because Mikko Rantanen is a superstar in this league. But Logan Stankoven is a 23-year-old just pit bull who goes out there and works his ass off night in and night out. And I stand corrected. This guy's he's unbelievable. Do I think he's going to be a 100-point getter or a 50-goal scorer or anything like that? No. I think his sweet spot is 60 points. But what he does do is he plays a solid team game and he knows how to win. And he's one of those guys that you know you can rely on shift in and shift out. And you pair him up with the Jackson Blake, who is just it's just incredible how much energy and speed and talent this guy has. And he's only 22 years old. And all of a sudden you give him to Taylor Hall, who's 34, and he's been there, done that, a former number one overall. And you form this fantastic line. You have the power and the grit of a Taylor Hall. You have the creativity of a Jackson Blake, and you have the dogged tenacity of a Logan Stankoven. And it's like, damn, that's a pretty good line. Then all of a sudden it takes the pressure off of Jarvis, Svechnikov, and Aho. It's like, okay. But another big move they made was getting Nikolai Ehlers, who paired up with Jordan Martinook and Jordan Staal. And that third line was absolutely dominant at times. The big goals Nikolai Ehlers scored in the Eastern Conference Finals were necessary for this team to make Stanley Cup Finals. So how they make this roster is just, A, you draft well. B, you see weaknesses and you just change them right away. And C, you see other teams throwing away castaways and you take advantage of other teams getting away of good players. I think of a Logan Stankoven, a Shane Gostisbehere, a Keandre Miller coming over from the Rangers, where the Rangers were just shedding contract and cap space. And the Hurricanes are like, yeah, hey, we'll take some of that. That sounds good. Nikolai Ehlers coming over from the Winnipeg Jets. And then Taylor Hall, who was a healthy scratch in Chicago. Now he's darn near the Conn Smythe champion for on a Stanley Cup champion team. So kudos to you, Carolina Hurricanes. You were Stanley Cup champions. And it started from the top down. The coach, obviously loved by his players, Rod the Bot. Man, that guy's jacked. Doesn't it bother you when he takes his shirt off in the locker room? It's like, how do you get that chiseled? Like, it's just incredible. So, cheers to the Carolina Hurricanes. Cheers to everybody in my Slack channel who's just ripping me apart. You deserve it. I don't think it was a fluke. I do think Carolina will be there next year. But hopefully, we do get some better series next year than we got this year. Because the Eastern Conference, other than Montreal and Buffalo and Montreal and Tampa Bay, kind of felt like it left me wanting more. And we'll leave it at that. Speaking of coaches, obviously, Rod the Bod gets his Stanley Cup Hall of Fame coach. Should be maybe a Hall of Fame player, but we'll see what happens there. But the Maple Leafs and the Vegas Golden Knights have hired new bench bosses. The Toronto Maple Leafs obviously have parted ways with their coach, and they've been looking for a little bit, an extensive search. They've interviewed a number of coaching candidates. They had Joe Pavelski, friend of the show, two or three-time friend of the show, in to interview for their new position. And who do they fall on? Is it Bruce Cassidy, the Stanley Cup winning champion, the Jack Adams Award winner, the President's Trophy champion? No. Is it Joe Pavelski, a young, super offensively gifted, sees the game better than most people, a coach akin to maybe a Martin St. Louis from Montreal, a guy who just would know how to jumpstart that power play and speak to the younger players? Is it him? No. Is it David Carlisle, a young coach out of the college ranks who would just be great in the NHL and someone just needs to give him a chance? No. Is it Patrick Waugh, a Hall of Fame goaltender and a coach who, you know, demands respect from his players, who is passionate, who goes out there and gives it all, and he's not afraid to bench superstars and play fourth liners and just call guys out in the media, which is desperately needed in Toronto? Is it him? No. It's Jim Hiller. The coach who was fired by the LA Kings midseason last year. He had been the head coach of the LA Kings for 3 seasons. He was the assistant coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs before that. Jim Hiller is back in Toronto to turn the tide, to bring this once storied franchise back to the promised land. Jim Hiller. This is a terrible hiring. It sucks. There's no reason for it. It does not make sense. I don't want to hear from anybody saying, well, look at Jim Hiller. His 5-on-5 expected goals against when he was with the LA Kings were one of the best in the league. In 2023-24, he was fifth, and then he was first in 24-25, and then last year he was fourth. So 5-on-5 expected goals against, this guy was really good. Like, he was right there. Like, he knows what he's doing in the defensive zone, everybody. Okay. When you have a team that is Anze Kopitar and Drew Doughty and Philip Deneau and all these guys, like, obviously your expected goals against at 5-on-5 is going to be good. The LA Kings are not, you know, a Wild West up and down the ice type of team. They are a veteran team who knows how to play defense. You could throw any coach on that team and they would be good expected 5-on-5 goals against. That's just the nature of that team. That's like saying the New Jersey Devils of the 90s, it was just a coach. That's why they were that good. No, it was Niedermeyer, it was Stevens, it was Danico, it was Bobby Holik, it was Patrick Elias. It was all these guys who knew how to play defense, and they just happened to be on the same team together. So for everybody saying that, oh, he's going to come in and fix the Toronto Maple Leafs because look at the LA Kings were good at defense. What the hell was Craig Berube? What was Craig Berube there for then? His calling card was defense. His calling card was just getting guys to play his way and play defensive in a 200-foot game. How the hell did that work out for you? Not good. Not good at all. They stunk last year for Craig Berube. Their defense was atrocious. It's a personnel issue with Toronto when it comes to defense. It's not a coaching issue. They've had coaches up and down who begged them to play defense, begged them to play in the D zone. Please block shots. Please come back hard. Please play as a 5-man unit in the D zone. Come on, do it. And they never do. It's a personnel issue when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So the idea that you can bring in Jim Hiller and he all of a sudden has the magic mixture and the magic fairy dust he can sprinkle on these guys and they all of a sudden turn into players that care in the defensive zone is laughable. It's absolutely laughable. This is a terrible hire. Did you see the offensive output of the LA Kings last year? No, neither did I. They didn't have any. They were a terrible offensive team. Did you see them in the first round of the playoffs? Neither did I. They were a joke. This team, year after year after year, just regressed into a dump and chase team that doesn't chase, and you play the trap, and you try to beat them 1-0, 2-1, and that doesn't work, especially when you get Artemi Panarin, you have Adrian Kempe, you have all these high-end offensive talents, Kevin Fiala with the LA Kings, and it just didn't work. So I don't understand it. I don't understand the hire when you have all these other options available. Jay Woodcroft would be great. He's an offensively gifted coach. He coached for the Edmonton Oilers for a while. He's a great, great offensive mind. He was my coach with the San Jose Sharks. He would be great with this team. But no, you end up with Jim Miller, who is familiar with Nylander and Matthews and all these guys. He was the assistant coach for a few years, 3 or 4 years ago. So he knows them, but it's just so bad. And Chytra, their GM, is just off to a smoking start. And so terrible hiring. Moving on to the Vegas Golden Knights. They let John Tortorella go. His contract was up June 30th. He signed a very short-term contract. Bruce Cassidy still under deal. Many thought that Cassidy might come back. Who knows what's going on? But no, they have moved on. They have hired, who did they hire? Let's see here. Ryan Craig, their AHL coach, who's been with the Henderson Silver Knights for the last two seasons. He was the assistant coach under DeBoer, under Gallant, under Cassidy, and he has been groomed. If you talk to anybody in the Vegas organization, the big coaching, you know, not scandal, but just who's going to be the Vegas Golden Knights coach, the big unknown, everybody knew in that organization that Ryan Craig was the coach. He was being groomed for this job for the last 7-6 years. Kelly McCrimmon, the one thing he did when he was a GM, when they brought in these coaches, Gallant, DeBoer, and Cassidy, he made it perfectly clear that one assistant coach was Ryan Craig. Because typically head coaches come in and you have to pick your assistants. Not have to. You get to pick your assistants. Kelly McCrimmon said, nope, one assistant will be Ryan Craig. And then once he got his feet wet as an assistant coach, he sent him down to Henderson to be the head coach, and he was successful there. Ipso facto, now he's the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. I like this. He's apparently loved by his players. He apparently does, you know, a decent job behind the bench. He's a fun-loving guy, but he gets his players to work hard. So we'll see how it works out. But it's a change-up of just the old old dogs crew. You know, oh, who's the next coach going to be? Put your hand into the bin. It's going to be Gallant, Gerard Gallant. Okay, you got Laviolette. Okay, good. Oh, who did you get? You got, let's see. Oh, it's going to be Bruce Cassidy. Or it's John Tortorella. It's just, we're away from that, which is nice. Anytime you can get new blood into the system for the coaches, that's a great thing. Hopefully he does well, and hopefully it's not a huge flame out, but it does, you know, it is nice to see a little bit of some fresh blood in there. And the Knights, if anybody can do this because they've been successful and they just got done losing in the Stanley Cup final, so they have a little bit of leeway here. If the Toronto Maple Leafs maybe did this, there'd be a little criticism, but because the Knights are so successful, they did just make the cup final. They're allowed to do things like this. All right, moving on. There's been some trades, minor trades, but maybe gearing up for free agency coming up in a couple weeks, gearing up for the draft coming up in a month or so. Joseph Woll got traded by Jacob Chytra? Who's Toronto's first name? John or whatever. We'll call him Chytra. He traded I'm losing my mind here. He traded Woll to Philadelphia for Ersson and a third-round draft pick swap of goaltenders. Kind of a ho-hum trade. I think this ends up being well for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You rid yourself of some cap space. You get in a good, I think, a decent goaltender in Samuel Ersson, who just did not stick with the Philadelphia Flyers for whatever reason. He never really became that guy they wanted him to be. Played some games, but up and down his career so far once he joined the Philadelphia Flyers when he was 22, 23. But decent trade. You shed yourself of Simone Benoit, who I absolutely hated. And you're trying to rework that defense. You still have some work to do. You got Riley, McCabe, Tanev, Eriksson Ek. You need to do something, but getting rid of that guy does help. Maybe this sets you up for another move. I've heard there's whispers that Bobrovsky might be looking at Toronto, which could be an interesting get for the Toronto Maple Leafs if they can pry him out of Florida. So that could be fun there. But a minor trade there. Another minor trade, the San Jose Sharks talk to my former team, the Buffalo Sabres, and they get Michael Kesselring. And a first-round pick for a first-round pick. They swap first-rounders. Buffalo jumps up 7 picks. San Jose drops 7 picks, and they also get a Michael Kesselring. I like this move for the Sharks. I think it's a smart move. Kesselring obviously comes over in the Paterka trade from the Utah Mammoth with Josh Doan. So essentially this is just a Josh Doan for a Paterka trade, which I think Buffalo still wins. But Michael Kesselring never really got a – now, I don't want to say a fair shake – with the Buffalo Sabres, but he fell out of favor pretty quick with Lindy Ruff, and he found himself on the bench in the playoff run, and he just never really got any ice time. So now he gets to go to a San Jose Sharks team that desperately needs right-handed defensemen. And he's not going to be asked to do very much because they already have a solid top four on that team, and he slides in on that group as a young 26-year-old. He can play with, you know, whoever, and he's a big dude, and he shoots right-handed. That's the big thing. I said that before, but anytime you can find a guy that size who can move a little bit like he does, who shoots right shot, high ceiling, he's the 3-4 defenseman on the right side. His floor is a 5-6 defenseman. So I think this is a huge win for Mike Greer. People are saying, well, does this take them out of the running for Reed for the second overall pick? No, not a chance whatsoever. I think they're still right there for a defenseman when it comes to the number two overall pick. I think they go with Ivan Stenberg, but we'll see. Time will tell how that goes. And then another trade or a proposed trade. There's been rumors swirling. The GMs just had their meeting. Everybody met up, and everybody's saying Matthew Nyes from the Toronto Maple Leafs will be traded. Per Elliot Friedman, per Darren Dragon, per all these guys. That's another thing that kind of bothers me. Every time this year, everybody is going to get traded. Anytime you click on Twitter, anytime you click on hockey news or whatever, it's like, oh, they're getting traded. They're getting traded. Everybody has some kind of trade rumors surrounding them. And it's just, we should come up with some kind of scorecard for all of these hockey insiders, whether it's Sarah Valley or Dreger or Friedman, whoever it may be, or Johnson, and then tick if they're right and tick if they're wrong. So we can go back and go, okay, Elliot Friedman said that, you know, Hellebuck's going to get traded. You know, they're shopping his name. And you can go back to his record and you go, you know what? You got a terrible record. I'm not going to believe you. But then someone will go, oh, Darnell Nurse asked for a trade. And you go, okay, Jason Gregor, how have you been? You've been pretty good. Okay, let's believe that one. But we're going to believe everybody to their word today. Matthew Nyes is being shopped, reportedly, to everybody. Because why wouldn't you want this guy on your team? And if this is true, and Chytra, it's Chytra, that's what it is. I'm getting him confused with Jacob Chytra and John Shaika. So Shaika, if he's shopping Matthew Nyes, and that's his first big deal out of the gate, is not touching Austin Matthews or Nylander or Morgan Riley or any of those players, and he ships out Matthew Nyes, his tenure will be short. You cannot trade this guy. He's an absolute moose. He has some offensive upside, obviously, as we've seen, but what he has is he's got some compete. He's got that dog in him. You do not trade guys like that. I mentioned Bobrovsky to Toronto. Connor Hellebuyck has purportedly asked for a trade from the Winnipeg Jets, and Darnell Nurse has reportedly asked for a trade from the Edmonton Oilers. So it could hopefully end up getting spicy in the next coming weeks and months if we get some trades coming down the pipeline. But for now, we congratulate the Carolina Hurricanes. Good job on the Stanley Cup Finals. Hopefully you can get back there again. I apologize to everybody out there for me not taking them serious. I thought they were going to lose. But that's just me. So I will eat my crow. You can drink your champagne, and we'll be back in a couple days to talk. I'm going on vacation next week, so I got one more in me this week, and then we're going to take a nice needed break. It was a long playoff run. It was fun, but here we are. Congrats to the Hurricanes. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you in a couple days. Cheers.